Hello, welcome to another episode of Papa Bear Hikes. Today's guest will talk about a trail association whose volunteers and membership are dedicated to enhancing and preserving this very unique trail we're going to talk about. Our guest has been actively involved with this trail, grew up in the area as a native of the Tahoe area, and according to their website and her bio, her first trail day, the shovel she was using was actually about a foot higher than she was. It was taller than she was. Being very knowledgeable about not just the Tahoe Rim Trail, but other outdoor activities in that area, she's going to share with us some of her knowledge and some tips about people who may be interested in hiking in this area, specifically the Tahoe Rim Trail. Since 2011, she's been serving as the outdoor program director for the Tahoe Rim Trail Association. Let's welcome Lindsay Schultz. Lindsay, how are you? How are you doing today?
I'm great, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing great. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I gave a little bit of an introduction, but probably didn't do it any real justice.
So as you said, I'm a Tahoe native. I'm actually born here and raised here. And I was very fortunate to have an active father. And at some point in the mid-90s, he scooped me up one day and said, hey, they're trying to build this trail that circumnavigates the entire basin, the Lake Tahoe Basin. Come out with me. And so we did. We went and built a little section of trail. I, to this day, cannot remember exactly where that was. Obviously, I had no idea that it would become a profession of mine to be an advocate for the trail later in life. Like you said, I've been working at the association since 2011. And I'm very honored. It's a wonderful place to be part of.
Yeah. And that's such a great story. My introduction to the outdoors and backpacking was through my father, my kids, the same thing. A lot of it, advice I give the parents is get your children out there. And now, you know, your father maybe at that time didn't know either. He was going to turn this into a lifelong passion of yours and a career.
Right. So. Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about the history of the trail.
Recreation in the basin in the 70s and before that looked very different. We didn't have a lot of designated trails. Mountain biking essentially didn't exist then. And folks would just kind of go up from the towns that surround the water's shore, the Lake Tahoe shore, and just head up the mountain. So there was a Forest Service worker. His name was Glenn Hampton. And he thought, you know, as recreation is starting to increase, we really ought to build a trail that circumnavigates the ridgeline of the Lake Tahoe Basin. You know, trails are important because it allows us to disturb 32 inches of trail tread and leave the rest of nature alone. And he really believed that it was important. If we're going to keep pushing ourselves into nature, then we should designate a path. So we just stay on that one path. So in 1981, his dream started to kind of come to fruition. And that's when they started to submit permits and become an association and say, okay, what's it going to take to do this, to build this trail? At that time, they estimated it would be about 150 miles. And they also estimated it would only take about 7 years. So this is 1981. We actually hit ground, in 1984. And we actually did not complete the trail until 2001. So that estimation was pretty off. But you know, through the efforts of thousands of volunteer hours, literally hundreds of thousands of volunteer hours. It took us to complete the trail in 2001. So that's where we are. Well,
that's where we've ended up with, right? And now we have a loop. There's a loop now that goes around Lake Tahoe. It's a loop trail, which makes it my opinion, easier for a thru hiker in terms of logistics. You start at one point and that's where you're finishing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and that's part of the appeal as far as I'm concerned is, I could start here, but when I get to the end, I now need to find a way to get myself back home or to where I parked my car.
Right.
I'd like to talk a little bit about a topic that's probably been talked to death, but still needs to be looked at. 2020. We all saw, in all parts of the country, we saw an increase in outdoor activity, which is great. It's great to see so many people getting outdoors. But what kind of an impact did that have, if any, on the Tahoe Rim Trail?
Yeah, it had a huge impact. And there are many reasons for that. And it's hard to exactly decipher the impact of just a general increase in outdoor recreation, like we've all been seeing, 2020 aside, COVID aside, and the impacts that COVID brought. So, in general, the Lake Tahoe Basin is seeing more and more tourists every year. It's actually estimated to be 5.7 million visitors to Lake Tahoe a year. We have a trail counter program, the Tahoe Rim Trail Association, and have been monitoring trail use on our trail for several years now. Our data tells us that we're nearing 500,000 users a year. And that is, of course, an increase from years past. We estimate about a 5% increase every year. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And to think we're covered under snow for, 6-7 months out of the year, most of that use is concentrated between May, June-ish, and October, November-ish. Quite a lot of people. The tough thing about the pandemic that really added to the mess that amount of people can cause is the Forest Service being overwhelmed, not being able to staff trailheads, therefore not opening up some trailheads, not opening up parking, not having trash receptacles because they simply didn't have the manpower to go pick up the trash. You know, a garbage can's only as good as it can be if you can remove it once it's full. So that's caused a lot of impact. Folks illegally parking with areas that were closed, parking very dangerously on the shoulders of highways, having people walk around that area, running across the street, things like that. Overall, we've seen a lot more folks this summer than normal, but that's also a trend we've been seeing over the years.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't because I use Sawyer water filters. Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through their process. I've been using their permethrin product for years now to protect me from, quite frankly, ticks, and the picaridin to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent, they're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible, high-quality products that they offer those of us who enjoy the outdoors. On the topic of impact on the trail, we'll dive right into Leave No Trace. Mm-hmm. Campsites along the trail, are there limits on the number of people who can camp there? Now, from my understanding, there's no lean-tos up here in the Northeast. A lot of the trails or backcountry areas have lean-tos.
Yes, that's very foreign to us out here.
Right.
Yeah.
But as far as the number of people who are using the campsites, have you seen any kind of negative impact in regards to overuse?
Yes, absolutely. So we're fairly easy when it comes to permits out here. The only overnight permit required on the entire trail, which is about 170 miles, is through Desolation Wilderness, which I believe it still is. And if it's not, it's in the top three most visited wilderness areas in our country. And that takes up about 32 miles of our trail. So you have to hike through Desolation Wilderness for about 32 miles. And so that is on a quota system, fortunately. There's lots of gorgeous, beautiful alpine lakes out there. And they've broken it up into zones and have a quota system for those zones. So for the rest of the trail, that's fairly under control. The day use isn't regulated, but the overnight use is. It's still extremely popular and can get very, very crowded. But as for the rest of the trail, camping regulations require that you camp within 300 feet of the trail, but not within 100 feet of the trail. So a 300-foot trail corridor. And our trail passes by a lot of lakes as well. And what we're seeing is even if you are camping within 300 feet of the trail and there's a lake nearby, folks, I don't know if they just don't know or they don't care, but, you know, a lot of tents being set up right on the edge of the water or right on the edge of the trail or right along the or on top of shrubs and so on. And what we're seeing are our ground cover, our trees and shrubs receding from the water shores. We're seeing our little beaches around these lakes become really barren, which is really sad to see. It's a part of the ecosystem. And that's probably the biggest camping impact, that we see out here. We really push people to camp in a location that doesn't look like it's been previously camped in. And then of course, leaving that area better than you found it. So if you're going to clear out some duff and some rocks, to make a nice surface, put those duffs and rocks back. If you are approaching an area that you want to camp in, that's, you know, we're talking non-designated camping sites. If you are approaching an area that looks impacted, then go ahead and camp there because it's already been impacted. It's already too late to preserve that area. So we encourage folks to either camp where it has not been impacted and clean up after yourself, or camp where it already has, so you're not creating more impact.
Yeah, I've always felt the dilemma with the Leave No Trace ethics is oftentimes you're preaching to the choir. It's the people who are already going out and hiking or backpacking, mm-hmm. when really understanding Leave No Trace is important is understanding the gear you're buying or mapping out where you're going to hike or backpack. Mm-hmm. It's just as important to, or if not more important, to understand that before you put your pack on and take that first trip.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners are preaching to the choir again. You know, they're the ones that are really interested in backpacking and understand Leave No Trace and its importance. But, you know, there's bad seeds everywhere.
Food storage. What do you do out there for food storage? Again, we have some concepts out here in the East, such as bear boxes, which are basically a construction box people can put their food in, bear poles where people can hang their bags. But this has become a topic, a personal topic of mine. I've got a growing interest in is food storage. You know, use a food canister, carry the couple extra pounds, or do you just say, okay, I hope I find the right tree and I can get the exact hang I need to secure my food?
Yeah, food storage in the Lake Tahoe Basin, whether you're in the trail, out in the backcountry or in towns, is an issue. Even just taking out our garbage to the curb on trash day is an issue. To back way up, being born and raised here, by the time I left when I was 18, you know, I eventually came back, obviously. By the time I left, I'd probably seen maybe 10 bears in my entire life. I came back about, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago now. And, now I probably see in some of the more active months, I probably see 8, 10 bears a week. And a lot of that is where there's people and where there's trash. Unfortunately, that's going to be, I mean, our bears are even learning trash days in towns. So they definitely know those popular lakes, especially in Desolation Wilderness. they know where to go. They know where there are massive amounts of people out in the backcountry. They're so intelligent. The only actual requirement, I hate to actually say this, but the only requirement for bear proofing is through Desolation Wilderness. But as the association and quite frankly, all other stewards of Tahoe's backcountry will strongly, highly encourage, recommend, beg, plea that you use food storage in the entire basin, no matter what part of the trail you are or what part of any trail you're in the basin. You know, we're not the only trail. And to also use a bear bin versus a bear hang or, I love URSAC. I think it's a fabulous concept and we're getting there. But unfortunately, I've seen one of those fail, get ripped to shreds in Desolation. So we really, really, really encourage bear bins. That has been the most tested, verified piece of equipment you can use for proper food storage. And I also want to say, you know, we call these bear bins, bear hangs, bear cans, bear boxes. I prefer to use critter cans because they're not just for our bears. We're starting to see our marmots, our mice, our squirrels. They're learning how good salt tastes. They're learning to lick and chew on your waist belt of your pack where you got salt buildup, or you keep some trail mix in your pocket on your waist belt. Even if it's empty and there's just remnants in there, we're starting to see little mice come up when you have your pack set down while you're swimming in the lake and they're starting to chew it. It's very, there's only a few areas that I'm starting to see it, but if we don't get it under control now, it's going to get out of hand. So it's really critter cans, for all of our wildlife out here, and bear cans the way to go.
Yeah, I agree with you looking at it that way. I've hiked in areas where the mice are a bigger concern than the bears. And right. I've heard more stories of people's food bags being torn, chewed into by mice and not attacked right. by bears.
Exactly.
Or raccoons getting to their food.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And again, you know, thanks for touching on that, because my own feelings are, you know, we've come so far with the amount of weight that we carry when we backpack. We've reduced it so much over the years. This isn't the 1970s where mm-hmm. we have a backpack that weighs 12 pounds.
Right.
For adding an extra 2.5 pounds to take that precaution. Mm-hmm. And we're protecting the wildlife. I mean, it's the other way we have to look at this. The old adage, a fed bear is a dead bear. Once we habituate these bears, right. we're endangering them.
We're also protecting our own experience too. Mm-hmm. You know, we're keeping the wildlife wild.
And I floated the idea a couple of years ago to a friend about hiking around the Tahoe Rim Trail. I had already done some research, and I pointed out that there's approximately a 30-mile section on the east side of the trail where water is a real issue. Maybe you can't even get the water. And the reaction was, you're hiking around Lake Tahoe. What do you mean there's no water? So if you want to talk about water access a little bit and, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very accurate. There are stretches of trail that have more water than you would ever know what to do with. And then there's parts of trail where there is literally zero water, or at least zero water come once the snow's melted. Water and resupply are often the two items that most folks take into consideration when they're planning their itinerary, because, like you said, there are there's two fairly long stretches that are waterless, and if you time your resupplies just right, you can also add water to your resupply, and then not only get resupplied for your food and such, but also your water. There's a really long stretch. I believe, don't quote me on this, I think it's about 17 miles. That's in the North Shore. Mm-hmm. And that is completely waterless. There's not even any seasonal streams or creeks there's nothing, no matter what time of year you're going. On the east shore, like you touched on, there are some seasonal streams. Absolutely depends upon our winter snowpack, how long those last. In big years, we can see those running all year long. And in bad years, which is kind of what it's looking like this year will be for us, unfortunately, you know, those are going to go away really early season. The Nevada State Park saw this as being a big issue, and the Tall Rim Trail Association. So we worked together with them long before my time. I believe it was in the 2005-ish maybe. We actually got a pump installed near Marlette Peak. It's at the Marlette Peak campground. And that makes a really long stretch. So that would be from Spooner Summit to Tahoe Meadows. With only those seasonal streams I was talking about that go away really quickly. Without that pump, that's all you got. So with that pump there, it makes that whole stretch a lot more bearable, which is, it's about a 24-mile stretch.
Okay. So we talked about, touched on resupply a little bit, and there are some towns scattered around the trail for resupply. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us how difficult or easy it may be for a through hiker to resupply on the trail?
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, there are several towns. They range in population from about 2,000 to 22,000. The lowest part of the trail coincides with the only part of the trail that physically goes through a town, and that's Tahoe City. And that's going to be in the northwest corner of the basin. So the trail will literally pass right next to a Save Mart. There's a great gear shop right down the way as well. You know, if you need a boot repair, new laces or fuel, it is definitely the most convenient place to resupply. But it's obviously not the only place to resupply either. There's another common spot that is pretty accessible. You only have to go about maybe a mile off trail, and that's going to be off of Kingsbury Grade in the southeast portion of the trail. There's a great market called Tramway Market, and the owners there are great. They'll hold packages for you if you want to ship them ahead of time or drop them off. And there's a great burger joint right next door if you need a cold one and a nice burger. So those are the two most convenient places to resupply. That's again, that's the northeast corner and the northwest corner and the southeast corner. But you're going around when you're hiking on the trail, you can see the lake for most of the time. And if you can see a lake, you know, a town is just below you as well. So a town is never too far. Uber, unfortunately, our public transportation is not up to par here in the entire basin. So Uber, taxi, that kind of thing is what most folks use to get off the trail. Echo Summit in the southwest corner of the trail is a common place to get off. South Lake Tahoe in the city of Myers is just 5-6 miles down the road. Harder to hike, easier to drive. You can make just about everywhere work because, again, while you definitely have a backcountry feel and you're certainly in the backcountry, our basin is only so big. The fact that you could see that big giant blue lake in the middle means that a town can't be that far away from you.
Yeah, looking at this trail, doing some of the research I have, it seems like it'd be a really good, maybe a first good through hike for somebody looking to test the water, so to speak, of a through hike, because you said you have those amenities and it looks like you can always get to a town. Okay, if I didn't pack enough food, well, I know I'm not that far, or maybe I'm a day or two where I can get to a road crossing where I can get myself into town. So that's
absolutely. I completely agree. We never advocate for people to just go out and go in blindly. You know, we want preparation is important no matter how easy or hard the trail is. Our backcountry, while we have a safety net of being so close to towns, you can still definitely get in trouble out here. So we can't be naive about that. But yes, you're absolutely right. It's a great starter trail. It's a great warm-up trail for longer hikes, kind of a good shakeout trip. We cross 7 highways, and these are major highways. These aren't desolate highways at all. You have decent cell reception between Verizon and AT&T. That's probably the most common I hear about. Pretty decent cell reception, and if you don't, you can usually find it within a mile of where you're at. It's really well signed. The association I work for, we're amazing. Obviously, I think that our trail builders and all of our volunteers are phenomenal, and the trail is in excellent condition most of the time. If it's not, we just haven't been able to get out there yet. We're constantly improving the trail, and alone, gosh, I can't remember how many trees we removed early season last year, but I mean, we're removing hundreds of trees off the trail. I mean, that alone is quite a feat for us. So the trail is very, very well maintained. It's very well signed. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to back up and touch on, you know, preparation, right? That nothing is better than being prepared when you go out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just warning people, don't let your guard down just because there are the towns scattered right around that lake. I see it here in New York. I do a lot of hiking in Catskills, and there are sometimes on a monthly or several times a month cases where search and rescue have to go out because people must have just assumed, hey, I'm only 2 miles from New York City. How much in the wilderness can I be?
Right. Yeah.
How remote could this possibly be? Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Especially in our transition seasons, when there's still fresh dirt in some areas and ice in others, there are a lot of dangers out there. No matter what backcountry you're in, the 7 P's are always coming into play. Absolutely.
Yeah. Even the most seasoned hikers and backpackers can have an accident or.
Oh, absolutely. Our search and rescue is very active in the basin, unfortunately.
Yeah.
All year round.
Are there a typical number of days or weeks someone can anticipate? I mean, you should be able to look at your own abilities, but not being familiar with the terrain, the average hiker, and I know this is a hard thing to address. I mean, there's some people that can hike at a much faster pace than others, but to your knowledge, is there a typical duration?
Yeah, I would say the common person takes about 10, 12 days. I personally think about 12 days is nice. That gives you time to jump in those beautiful alpine lakes, taking those views that, you know, the literally once in a lifetime views that you're going to see. Find a cool spot and decide, you know, I want to hang out here for the afternoon. You're still hiking a lot. I don't know what the average is for about a 12 day through hike, but the average for a 15 day through hike is about 11 and a half miles a day. So a little bit more than that on a 12 day through hike. I think 15 days is a super nice leisure pace. You are definitely not pushing your boundaries by any stretch, but it's still going to be difficult, and you're going to really enjoy it because you're going to have plenty of time. For those folks that do it in 6-8 days, super doable, extremely doable. Personally, I want to stop and smell the roses a little bit more, and give myself more time. So it really is your prerogative. Some folks simply don't have 10 days to take off of work, or they don't want to deal with resupplying over the course of 10 days. They'd rather bust it out in 6 to 8 because maybe just because of the resupply alone. So it's, you know, like you said, it's really up to the individual and their ability, what they want to get out of this hike.
Yeah, I'm more with you. I like to smell the roses, or sometimes just take out my sleeping pad. If I find a place with a nice view, a nice rock, or if I'm up on top of a ski lift, I've been known to take an hour, half hour nap just because it's a nice, comfortable place to be. I really like to just focus on the journey, not checking off a box, but to each their own.
Exactly.
But that's me.
Yeah.
What type of lands does the trail cross over public lands, private lands? I know there's, you know, desolations in national forest.
Designated wilderness area. Yeah. So we go through, we're mostly Forest Service land. Private property, if there is any private property, we might skirt some corners. This isn't my area of expertise. But we've gotten easements if we do go through any private property. And if we do, you probably wouldn't notice if you were. But mainly National Forest, and also Nevada State Park.
That's good, because that's a big challenge for a lot of these trail associations. They have no choice but to cross through private property sometime, and those easements can be lost just by the transfer of ownership of property. Right. So good news for the Tahoe Rim Trail Association and people who plan on hiking there. It's not likely to change much from year to year.
No, it's not, fortunately. What the Forest Service owns and has purchased is usually not going to be in the having a for sale sign on it anytime soon, because it also aids the preservation of Tahoe. Yeah.
So, Lindsay, I want you to tell me, if I'm looking at three trails that I'm considering hiking this summer.
Ours.
Tell me why. It's not going to be a tough sale, I can tell you that. You're not going to twist my arm too hard, but I just like our listeners to hear from you on that.
Sure. You know, this trail is inherently special. It's special because it's a semi-long trail that circumnavigates the Lake Tahoe Basin, breathtaking terrain along the ridgeline of a giant lake basin. And either if you're hiking clockwise, then you just look to your right that whole time and just keep staring at that giant blue lake. If you're hiking counterclockwise, and you look to your left, and there it is. That's one thing. You know, the lake is 72 miles around. It's 22 miles long. It's 12 miles across. It's the largest alpine lake in North America, the second deepest in the U.S., and I believe it's the deepest lake in the Sierra as well. And it's crystal clear. And our little pockets of alpine lakes that coincide with the trail and our even our dry sections, they're absolutely gorgeous. You think this trail is 170 miles long, and it goes in a circle. It's surprisingly very unique from depending on where you are on the trail. The creation of the Lake Tahoe Basin, to go back a little bit into my very little geology knowledge of the basin, you know, is carved out partially by glaciers. That's going to be your desolation wilderness. Those are your massive granite boulders, and you're like, wow, how did that just get sat right there on that mountainside? Looks like you can just flick it and it'll topple over, but you know it's been sitting there for a couple million years. And then there was a couple volcanoes that erupted in the north end. So that's a lot of shale. It's a lot of the landscape over there is very volcanic, really interesting, unique terrain over there. And then you go to the whole east shore, you have vast views of Nevada's Great Basin. You have sagebrush, you know, on the west side, you have ferns, and on the east side, you have sagebrush, with views for miles and miles and miles. It is so unique, this trail. There's no two spots alike. And the only way to really take in, I think the only way to truly take in Lake Tahoe is to stare at that lake from all angles that you can, and walk ground on all of the different unique landscapes that Tahoe has to offer. It's truly just soak it all in. There's nothing like it.
Well, you have me sold. You have me sold. Like, it's on my hit list. I'm either hiking the White Mountains or the Lake Tahoe Trail this summer.
So, there you go.
Lindsay, thanks so much for giving us your time. Does Tahoe Rim Trail Association have Facebook or a website you want to?
Yeah. I would just like to touch a little bit on the association, if you don't mind. I'd be doing a disservice to my nonprofit if I if I didn't just gloat about us for just a moment. So, you know, we have a 200-mile trail system that we take care of. The Rim Trail alone is about 170 miles. We are a nonprofit association of 7 staff members, sometimes 6, sometimes 9 with some seasonal employees. We manage in non-pandemic years, an average of 18,000 volunteer hours a year, 18,000 volunteer hours. The majority of that is trail building, but we also have a huge portion of our work that we do is to create the next generation of stewards and to educate, you know, our wonderful adult population that is also getting newly into recreation, catching them early, saying, hey, this is how you properly recreate in the backcountry. This is why you don't camp on a water shore. This is how you use the bathroom properly in the backcountry. We are huge advocates, not just for the trail, but for the trail corridor and the trail view shed. You know, we're going to fight tooth and nail if there's going to be a tower that's going to be put up in the middle of a gorgeous, once gorgeous view, a viewpoint off of the trail. Our association has strong youth programs, like you were touching on earlier, how both of our fathers, you know, taught us the importance of recreation and really created that foundation for us. And that's we believe that is so important. And for that, we get kids out backpacking. We take them out on 4-day trips in the summer. A lot of them are locals and they've never even backpacked or even hiked in their own backyard. Seeing the work we do on the trail is incredible. That's our foundation. But we're also doing a lot of other really fantastic work. And we're also doing it in partnership with the Pacific Crest Trail Association because we share 50 miles with them. The Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit, you know, that's our local division of our Forest Service here in Nevada State Parks. Mr. Glenn Hampton, our founding father, bless his soul. For without him, you know, there wouldn't be an us. And all of our members and our donors of the association, we thank them all. And of course, all of our volunteers. And there are multiple ways to get involved with us, starting just at a membership. If you're not in the area, but if you ever are in the area, we have work days all summer long. We have guided programs to check out for adults and youth. And yeah, we're incredible. We really are.
Right. And I just want to say this, you have one of the most comprehensive websites I've been to as far as trails. You guys do a great job of providing information from how to plan your trip, transportation. You do a great job.
Yeah, definitely. Anyone can give our association a call at any time. I just talked to a lady, from Maine this morning. She's planning her trip and we just talked for half an hour, working out some details for her trip. We really do take pride in our website. We feel that, that being a source of information for the public is important. So therefore, you know, we do have a comprehensive website, but definitely follow us on, we're very active on Instagram and Facebook as well. So folks can stay in the know through that, or go to our website and sign up for our monthly e-newsletter. And we really truly do try to only email everyone once a month. And it's a great way to stay in touch with us, keep up with what we're doing, what we have been doing and what we are going to do and ways to get involved. So that's TahoeRimTrail.org. And that's also our, both of our Facebook is Tahoe Rim Trail Association and Instagram is Tahoe Rim Trail.
All right. Well, thanks again, Lindsay. And everybody, please go check out their website, their Instagram page, their Facebook page. You won't be disappointed. And it may even encourage you to go out there and hike it. It's a fun place and it's on my bucket list. I am going to get there, if not this year, next year. But it's high up on my list. Yes, I will. Sure. Thanks again, Lindsay.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, please feel free to leave a review. If you found it helpful or useful or just entertaining, let us know. We can be contacted at papabearhikes@gmail.com or check us out at papabearhikes01 on Instagram. Thanks for listening. Get outside and have a great day. This episode of Pop Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.